We'd like to thank our sponsor for this episode, ViewRail,
America's leading manufacturer of floating stairs and modern cable glass railings.
They handle every part of the process, from design, engineering, manufacturing, delivery, all the way to installation.
There is a 10-year structural and finish warranty on all products installed by a ViewRail certified technician.
Nearly all components are made in-house, giving you more control over style, material, finishes, budget, and timeline.
All products are designed as a modular, integrated system that are engineered for easy installation. It's like putting together an erector set.
Thanks so much again, ViewRail, for sponsoring this episode. Welcome back. We're glad to have you guys here today. This is our first episode of the day. We're back from North Bennett Street. We have been in Boston. It was really good.
Yes.
Fun time seeing up
Great.
There.
Can't wait to go back.
Yeah. Our next couple of episodes, we got a slew of guests that are coming through. One guest, a little more familiar than the rest. Yes,
yeah,
means like a lot.
There you go.
Yeah. So you'll know what we mean by that. Brent was interviewed by an author for a book. And so we get to talk about her book, get to hear a little bit about Brent, his aptitudes and his skills, which is fun. Not very many of them. And then we have another guest coming on who is a host of the Aggregate podcast. So that's coming up. That'll be future couple episodes. They're exciting. But yeah, North Bennett. Recap, what did you think?
It's always great to go back.
Yep.
I'm going to be tied in a little bit more. I'm helping with the president search there.
Okay.
And so excited, looking for a new leader for that place.
You allowed to say that? Is that top secret?
No, it's a public search, and so it's not anything secret. Had a great past president. Now we're looking for a new one. Should be fun.
Fun.
So I'll be up there, hopefully more. Hopefully maybe every other month we go up there to record and shoot some videos. So
yeah, it's really funny. He actually went up for this first search, and I got a text the night before. I'll be in Boston tomorrow. Let me know if you can get lunch. Okay. Sure. Yeah.
So kind of busy, Jackson.
Apparently. Big shot, big time in me. It was fun getting to see you randomly in class. You got to see us milling doors.
Yeah.
We were putting together board and batten doors for our sheds. Our sheds are finally coming together. Kind of funny story. Steve has been telling us this whole time, you guys are ahead of the other class. This is going well, about a week ahead. And now we are a week out from our winter break right now. Sorry if that throws your whole time scale out of order, because this is releasing in January. But we were at like the week before, we're at the week before winter break, and Steve's like, we may be cutting it close on these sheds. And so he has completely changed his tune. So we're staying late. We're, you know, figuring it out. We've got a side left to shingle, front clapboards to put on. Clapboard?
I don't know. I heard it both ways. I think it's potato, potato, I think. So we're kind of getting a little update on North Bennett Street and the apprentice.
Yes.
As he grows. So still excited to be there?
No, I don't like it anymore.
You don't like it?
I'm all done with it. Can I quit? I love it. It is still amazing. I'm loving every minute of it. I think I can't stop learning new things. The hand tools are really cool. I really like the hand tool stuff. A lot of me is done with this whole we're building a shed portion right now. I think we're just
too practical.
No. I think the reasons that we do the shed as like from an educational purpose is because
we're a 10 by 12 shed.
Yeah, close enough. The reason that we do the shed building is because it's a small structure. And so I think the structure itself isn't the thing that's necessarily jazzing me up about the whole thing. I'm really excited to get into some finer details, to like putting columns on stuff, to doing gabled end returns, and like some of those things I'm really excited about. And I just need more practice, like making cuts on miter saws at an angle and not at a 45 and like a compound angle. I need like that kind of practice, or like hand cutting those things and planing them to a finish, because I'm still wonky there. And I want to get better at it, and I want to, you know, do those type of things.
You kind of got a taste of a bunch of these things. You're like, I need a lot more of this.
And I need to do like 37 different cabinets in order to, you know, get a bunch of different joints that fit together in cool different ways, rather than one shed door where if we mess it up, it's like, no, we got to go through the whole milling process again on this one piece. But
compare your time at this trade school to being an engineering student.
The world is of a difference. This is night and day. This is way better than engineering student.
Why?
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm dead serious.
Okay, just to put it in perspective, we had an open house recently and a bunch of students came through. One of the PC2 guys' dads runs shop class at a local high school and he brought a bunch of his high schoolers through. And he came, I was the only one doing something that day because Steve was busy talking to all the prospective students and all sorts of other stuff. And I was just cleaning up a plane, the number 6 that you gave me that I'm going to clean up and give back to
you. A bedrock, number 6.
And so...
605, sorry.
They saw that I was doing something, so he came right up to me and said, what's going on here? What are you doing? So I got to fill these students in, but one of the things, I like stopped and I said to the students, I just want you guys to know, I did not love college. There was a lot of times in college where I just skip class and I was like, oh yes, I'm getting the right end of this deal. Like, I don't really have to go to class. This is awesome. And then when I'm skipping class for this school, it's like, dang it, what am I going to miss? Like, how am I going to catch back up? How am I going to figure these things out? I'm like missing out on cool stuff that I don't get to do. So that's just the perspective that I have of this school. It just feels different where like previously I was like, yeah, I don't really want to go. But it just felt like there was no practicality in it. Like I think I've said that before on the podcast, but essentially when I was doing electrical engineering, my first class I took with it was you're building a robot with a bunch of other people. You're building a turbidity sensor on the robot. You're building a camera on it. You're doing all this stuff. And it was incredible because we built a robot that automated. It could just go through a obstacle course. And then there was code written for it. That was done by another team. There was this written for it. That was done by this team. I did the mechanical engineering, like just putting things together, making electronic components work. So great. Very practical. Then I went back to class in the spring semester whenever the robot was done. And it was like, we're doing differential equations today. And so differential equations, if you don't know, they end up, you like do this long, long math and you're working with numbers to the like 10th decimal point. And you come out with a number that's like 10 decimal points long. And you're like, I guess that's the right answer. And the teacher's reading it up at the front of the class. 3.964210514921. And you're like, oh, I got 1-3 at the end. It just, so draining, you know?
Yeah, that'd be
some people
hard.
Love that. I hated that part. We needed to know it because it was resistance values.
Well, I mean, the reason I'm asking is because, you know, I think you're wired to be an engineer. Just, you're a dork, right? And so it's just, you're...
Do you think that was going to get a bigger laugh from me? No, I agree. I'm with you.
So I always thought that you, when you were at SMU, that this, it was a great fit for you.
Mm-hmm.
It would have caused me to, you know...
What's up?
Yeah. It would have been hard for me to sit in those classes and do those equations and stuff like that. So North Bend Street, I loved it as well. I was curious whether we're wired a little bit differently, whether you would have felt the same or not. So that's why I was asking. And so it's good to hear that. And I guess I sit there as we wrestle with the trade school versus college, whether, you know, engineering at college, you could have found a program that had a little more practicality into it, or whether just where that balance is for people. So,
yeah. And maybe like SMU could have done a better job teaching some of that stuff, or maybe the field itself just really is that. And it's like, you might be working on robots, but you're working on like the most minute details of like a, and you don't get to see the end product. Sure. Maybe I would have been better if I had done like business engineering or something like that, to where I was like, I get to work with the engineers, but then I get to do the business stuff. Because I think one thing I learned in K-Life was I loved being a boss. And like, not from the aspect of like, I like telling people what to do and move around. I liked to go, ooh, you're really
strategic,
gifted at this.
And organized,
You're going to fit here rather than, you know, strategic, like video games, like type advantages. Oh, this one, this person's good at this. They're better at that. They're going to conquer this well. Love that. So
interesting.
Maybe I would have done better if I had been doing that, but even still.
What's the coolest thing you learned in the first half semester here?
In North Bennett?
Yeah.
Oh, it's like I've got your superpower, you know? Not that's wrong, that's right, that's wrong, but I can go, I know that house style. I know what that is. I could tell you what this is. Up to not very long. So maybe it's I don't have the superpower. It's developing.
You kind of should have a glimpse of it so that you think I could do
it
that.
It really is. Yeah. It's a glimpse of it because right now I cannot tell you past 1780, 90 what's up. Maybe some of the 1830s, 40s, but I'm really good at Federal Georgian first period stuff, and then I can distinguish a lot of the Victorian styles.
We'll have to have a quiz now.
Okay,
we'll
set up game a
quiz
on.
Next time we go to Boston and just see whether you really do know.
Okay, speaking of things to set up, just to explain, we have a poster that's out there that we really want to release.
Yeah.
A lot of people have been talking about it. We brought it up in the Master Builder University episode. People were like, oh, I want that thing. We have it. We want to set it up. We want to get it to you guys in a cost-effective way. It may just be the PDF of it, and then...
The problem is it costs like $70 to print.
Yeah.
And so we showed them a copy of it. It's big, and it's color, and it's all these different things. And then it was like, you know, $35 to mail.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden it was over $100, you know, to... And we're like, wow.
How do we do this?
Yeah.
So we may just release that in PDF form. Brent didn't love a lot of the house photos in it. Just know that's not something that's like actively in the works necessarily, but it's something that we like. We've seen the comments that are like, oh, I would still buy that poster. I would buy that poster. Know that that poster isn't just like a $25 poster. It's like a $125 poster. And then on top of that, Brent has some tweaks that he wants to make to it before we pop it out there. But it is something that, let us know if you really want it, because we would make a more concerted effort to start attacking it.
Yeah.
What else did you want to talk about?
Well,
we should probably wrap it up.
Thanks for coming. Yeah. No, I want to talk about installation.
I know.
The big news
out
of the London that I announced on my Instagram. All I did was I posted a picture of an article in BBC.
Very cryptic. Got,
like, zillions of comments. And so...
Did it really?
Yeah.
Wait, it was a story that you posted.
It was basically the picture of
an
article
DMs?
From BC. No, just comments. I can look it up.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I'll set it up. Basically, their banks in the UK are no longer lending to people who you're using spray foam insulation for their homes. So I don't know where the cog in the machine has fallen apart, where the people have necessarily revolted, or who it is that's saying, hey, we can't do this anymore. But basically, they have decided that spray foam insulation is not good for the homes. It's not good to be in their homes.
It was 100,000 plus views and comments. So it was
from zillions.
For my thing, that's a zillion.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, the banks of London, half of them come out and said, we're not loaning money on houses that have spray foam. Why? Because spray foam holds water and rots timbers. Okay. And so... You know, Matt did a big video kind of follow up. Wait. That's camping. You know, and I say, I think this is groundbreaking.
Okay? Wearing a Build Show shirt. Careful.
Yeah. No. The problem is, okay, and I've been saying for years, foam, especially open cell foam, is the asbestos of our age. Mm-hmm. Okay. And if this ends up kind of coming to America and happening, it will be the abatement cleanup thing of as much as asbestos or lead paint is. I've had two projects where we have rotted timbers because we did spray foam. Okay, so I have personal experience where I saw the results of it. One was a roof on a porch. We had spray foamed it, and then 3 years later, the homeowner kind of said, "I got mushrooms growing on my ceiling." And we're like, "What?" We go over there, you know, push your finger through the wood and open up this whole thing. And basically there was a handrail across the deck, and it had leaked, and very slow leak, but over a number of months and years, it had basically gotten in the water. If you know open cell foam, it's like a big sponge. It's like putting a wet sponge in your wall. It'll never dry out. It's just all it sits there and holds water. And so,
it was
just sitting there, and you know, these boards had started to warp. And I mean, we had a section of probably a 4x8 section that of rotted wood. Okay. And the timbers, the joists running across, we had to replace those. We had to replace the roof, all because of a small leak on the roof. The other one was another house we'd done where we began to see the floors in this bedroom, outside walls, let's just say is there, and the floors started warping. And we're like, where's the water coming from? What's going on? We peel off the drywall. The foam is dry. We're like, that's weird. We go back. The foam has actually come unstuck from the wall, and the back of the wall is all sheet, all the sheathing is rotted out. And so basically the foam, whether it's because it was misapplied or whatever else, had gotten behind the wall, hadn't sucked into the foam, but it had gone down to the plate.
Oh,
and
my
then,
gosh.
And then just run down the wall and just into the house. And I mean, it was...
So when they sprayed the foam in, it just expanded into that gap, basically?
No, when they sprayed the foam and then it... Whether I don't know why, but it was no longer adhered to the sheathing on the outside.
Yeah.
And so water was basically just running down the inside of the house on the sheathing and then running underneath the floor. Failures of foam, okay? Failure of open cell foam that had caused water damage. I'm afraid on my house that we sprayed foam into the attic of our house. If we get a leak on our roof, one, how will we ever know? Okay, we won't know. Because why? Because the foam actually is going to hold the water. And I'm going to be walking up on that roof, or someone is, and they're going to step through the roof because it's going to rot the decking, it's going to rot the wood, and you know, someone could hurt themselves pretty badly because of this
really
problem.
Badly.
And so that's what's going on in London, is basically realize that when, and Matt talks about this in his early career in Portland, because that's mm-hmm. where he started, Matt Reisinger. And he said he started to notice all these historic houses having rot damage and mold damage. He's like, what's going on?
Historic homes are just worse, I think.
Well, basically, in these historic houses that sometimes had no insulation, okay, the water would get in, and because of the wet dry cycle, it would basically evaporate or leave, and the boards would dry out. Okay, when we talk about the breathability, we want stuff to be able to dry out. And so, you know, Matt's just like, what's going on? What do we do? What's happened? And when you spray foam into the wall, you basically stop all ability for that wood to dry out. And that's what's happening in Europe and with those lenders there, where they're basically saying, look, we've got too much damage happening in our houses that is caused by foam holding onto water, rotting timbers. We're not loaning money on those houses. And so the article goes on to explain that these people are having to go into their house, take the sheetrock off the walls, clean out all the foam, and then before anybody will loan money on their house.
Good time to be a drywaller.
Good time to be a drywaller. Good time to insulate with other things.
Yeah.
And so I believe
that's so much work.
I believe, okay, Brent Uh-oh. Believes that this is going to absolutely come to America, okay? And I know too many production builders that are spray foaming their houses in order to pass an energy code, in order to make that feel like they've got that are causing problems in the wall. Because realize that with a starter house, okay, the sheathing on the outside of that house is basically cardboard. Okay. Yeah. It's gone.
Just a really thin layer.
It's literally
like 3/8 or
no, it's like 1/8 of an inch.
Are you serious?
Oh, I could go up and push my hand right through it. Somehow the engineers have figured that it does help the shear strength, because that's what you put sheathing on the house so it doesn't, you know, move.
Yeah, it locks it in a place.
It locks it in a place. Somehow that's still working, but the quality of that material is a joke.
Yeah.
And those guys spray foaming those houses and expecting those houses, I'm just telling you, the lawsuits are coming, and this will be, what are we, 2024, about to be 2025? I bet in the next 3 years, could be sooner, it might not take 3 years, might be in 2025, 2026, you are going to see news articles about this coming out. Because what banks in America are going to look at, they're going to look at that same thing, because they want to cut all liability, right? And so they won't loan money on a house that has asbestos in it. They won't loan money on a house that has lead paint. They won't loan money on a house that has a bad foundation, right? This is just another example of something that is a future harm to the house, that they aren't going to loan money on it because it's not going to last, right? The reason they won't loan money on a house with a bad foundation is because the value of that house will not last because the foundation is falling apart. Repair the foundation, then we'll loan money. That's what's going on, and it's a game changer because—
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. Now, Brent, the, you know, the
optimist,
does
he exist?
No, the historic guy that one.
Yeah, that Brent.
That thinks about old houses and stuff like that. The other reason, and is the craftsman, is the other reason I hate foam, okay?
I like that guy.
I like that guy. Yes, yes.
Brent the Craftsman. Yeah,
I like that guy.
Brent the Skeptic. He gets a little... but Brent the Craftsman? Brent the Optimist? Never met him, but heard good things.
You know this Seinfeld episode, hopefully.
Yes.
George. Friendly George. Ballpark George. Yes, I like that George. Me too. If the other George walks into here... the world as we know it will cease to exist. So, anyway.
Love a good Seinfeld reference.
Craftsman Brent, okay?
Yeah.
Hates foam. Why? Okay?
Because it doesn't let the house breathe.
No, the Craftsman Brent, okay?
Oh.
Because foam, when we first started using it, 10 years ago, whenever it was, 15 years ago, when we started thinking we were cutting edge by putting foam in our houses and no one else was doing it because it was too expensive, right? We were doing it saying we're building the best possible house for our customer. Yes, it costs more, but the energy efficiency is just off the charts. What's happened is now the foam is no longer the most expensive, okay? The foam guy, the insulators want to do foam now. Why? Because it's so easy.
Yeah.
Because all they'd have to do is train a guy to go... right?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to if you have uneven bats in your wall, you've got to cut that insulation to fit inside those wall cavities.
It's not just pre-cut.
It's a lot more work. And so I think part of the reason why it's become so prevalent is because it's easy, because it's literally pull a trigger and I've insulated the house and, you know, there's no longer that craftsmanship that goes into the wall. So Brenthold Craftsman hates foam for that reason as well.
In Boston, I've been shocked at what their building codes are and what they're requiring up there. Like, one, they're not allowing chimneys anymore in Boston. So there's like a new code that's passed that if you're building a new home in Boston, you will not be able to put a chimney in that house. Why? It's a giant hole that you're putting in the middle of your house. And so you can't keep it at the same temperature. So Brock, a listener of the podcast, what's up, Brock? And one of the teachers for carpentry, he said to us that a lot of people are trying to make their houses like bubbles, right? Where it's like a completely insular bubble. And there's almost two schools of thought where it's like you want to have a house that breathes or you want to have a house that's a complete insulated piece of box.
It's the igloo cooler kind of thing.
Yes.
That is the sealed, completely foam sealed box versus something that breathes.
And so Brock was explaining this to us and me and another one of the guys in my class were like, what in the world? I can't imagine wanting to live in a house that's like almost like a hermetically sealed, like bubble boy, you know, like you're living in this room that is the room. And like, what gets your air in and out of the house? Well, that's your AC system. That's your climate control. Yeah. So that blew my mind. I'd never heard of anything like that. And I've always heard houses have to breathe. And I guess in a climate zone like Texas, it does make a little more sense that it's like a two or whatever. I guess I'm just going, where are we going to see that number first? Like, where are places that are going to be using spray foam way more than other products to where we would see that first, you know?
Well, unfortunately, I mean, I don't think it's a climate zone driven thing, okay? Because one of my friends who's a production builder was saying that he gets a $2,000 rebate from the state for putting foam into his houses.
Hmm.
So even though we're in a climate that may not require that, there are still government incentives in order to do that. So naturally, that's what they're going to do. And so they're incentivized to do that. And so it's a little bit difficult to attribute it to that. Here's where I go on, and this is where I land on this, because Steve and Jake and Matt argue for the bubble, the igloo cooler. I think that's a better image for me And so if you've been having stood in Matt's house where he did that, I mean, there is a dullness in your ear that's like you can't hear anything. And if you're
anything outside the house.
Anything inside the house.
I guess it dampens the sound waves if they're not going
to. It dampens the sound waves so much. Now, how is he getting fresh heat and air in it? They were relying on a ERV where you're moving in air in and out of the house, and bringing fresh air into the house, right? Because if you have a house that's completely hermetically sealed, eventually the carbon monoxide is going to kill you, right? And so I always look at it too, that if we're in a zombie apocalypse, right?
Apocalypse.
We can't live in our house right now. Why? We don't have windows that open, right? 1962 house. How are you going to live without air conditioning and things? Now you go over to Berkeley or go over those bungalows and things like that. Those houses are perfect for that because they can allow the air to move in. You couldn't live in our house.
You're saying like all the electricity went down.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it was a zombie apocalypse.
A zombie apocalypse.
Here's where I fall on this thing, is I don't care about necessarily the comfort, which is what Steve and Matt would argue for, Jake, that they're trying to manage, okay, or the energy efficiency they're trying to manage. I care about longevity, okay? Mm-hmm. So I am trying to build for 100 years, not for next year.
Yeah.
And so that means that I'm realizing that I'm making sacrifices, especially on energy efficiency. But because I'm following so many of the things with the good water heaters, the good air conditioning systems with the higher SEER rating, and I'm upgrading the house in a number of different ways, I feel like if they're at 100, I'm at 82, or I'm at 92, or I'm somewhere in that range, that I'm close enough to them that I don't want to be a passive house with a blower door rating of 0.6.
Yeah.
I don't care. I want my house to last for 100 years or 200 years or longer. So I'm thinking, it makes me think about the products that I put into the house. Like, I don't want to have chipboard on my walls of my house.
Why not?
Because you're relying on glue to hold something together.
Mm.
So, we're getting back to, and the discussion we're having as our building team is like, what is the right sheathing for our house? Because Huber zip boards are basically a chipboard with Tyvek on it, right? And so it makes me go, gosh, is that going to last 100 years? Probably, but
that one seems like it's pretty good.
Well, we don't know though, but how long did the glues last? That's the problem with the flashing. Everybody's putting black tape flashing all over their houses.
Mm-hmm.
Is that glue really going to last 100 years? I don't believe it will. Right. I don't think it's going to catalyze. It's going to crack. It's going to get hard and there's going to be gaps in it. And so I would much rather have metal flashing. And so you just, right. You get
the black tape you're talking about for windowsills.
Yeah.
The Vicor.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
I would rather have
a aluminum flashing, copper flashing.
Stainless or something. Right. And so each of these different decisions that we're trying to make is how do we make this house that lasts a long time, but is also energy efficient. So we've got our water repairment barrier, right? WRB.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a product that our sheathing is going to last a long time. We've got the right insulation in the walls. This is a really kick-ass wall that we've got, but we're not trying to have a perfect, passive house. We just want a house that lasts a long time.
Yeah.
And so it forces us to change things like a flashing, like our windows. I'm not going to put a production window on our house because it won't last for 100 years, right?
And so yeah.
That's how we approach it, as opposed to trying to have a score that you go, well, if I did foam, I'm going to get a score of 100. But if I do Rockwool or, bath, I get a score of 93. I want the 100. And no, wait. I don't like that decision.
You should do the same. You should just make a system up for how long the house is going to last.
Yes, that's
if you start
idea.
Doing that, then people will go, well, what's my R value score? And then what's my house longevity score?
Dude, that's a great idea.
Are you already doing it?
No, oh. I think that's a great idea.
Because then people can go, okay, I'm scoring a 93 in R value, but I'm scoring a 22 in...
I wonder how you could do that. All right, you listeners out there, help me figure out how to do that, because that's a great idea. And what you would do is you would look at every product you're putting into the house, and you would be making decisions about, how long,
how long is this going to last?
What's the longevity cycle of this thing? Because...
But not only does that fix the longevity issue, like it will make the house last longer, but it also has the ecological value of not throwing away 30,000 different windows 100%. Through a house.
Yeah. No, the conservation and the sustainability is huge.
Because you're not going, what I just said made sense, right?
Yeah. Okay. And here's the deal, because building methods will actually drive that. For instance, if I build a 2x4 wall and I sheathe it and I put metal lath on it and try to stucco that, okay? That is a wall system that won't last very long.
Mm-hmm.
If I build that 2x4 wall 1-inch gap, air barrier, 1-inch gap, and then block it and then stucco it. Mm-hmm. I've got a wall that will last 100
because
years.
Because it's going to breathe better.
Because it's going to breathe better because I'm not putting stucco right back on that sheathing, right? I've got an air gap in there. I've got water can release. I've got an air barrier. And so because if you put sheathing on a 2x4 wall and then they put metal lath on it, they are perforating that wall with all these staples. Boom, 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 boom. That's how they staple it in. You no longer have an air barrier, right? You've got air that's going to be able to move right through that wall. Now you're putting water on it. Now you're putting sometimes your 3-coat stuccos on top of that and water. I've been in houses where you could actually see the water move right through that wall system. Anyway, it just isn't going to last very long doing it that way. Now you're adding $15 a square foot to the outside of your wall. Yeah, but it's going to last 100 years.
Yeah.
Now, that isn't necessary. That's a better way to build a wall. That my longevity score is going to go way up.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's an example of how if you built this system around a longevity cycle, you could do that. That's a great idea.
Well, then also people just like to see that they're scoring high.
Yeah. No, 100%.
That's what they want to know.
I remember there's my brother Scott, brother-in-law Scott in Virginia. They are out in California, they're in the wine business. You know how you'll go to a wine store and they'll score wines? Got a 92, got a 95. So they score wines.
Good to know.
And so they're scorers. And, and he was always saying, you should be able to score houses. He said, you ought to be able to, you know, look at a house and this go, this is a, you know, an 82 or an 87.
You could also give it a historical accuracy number.
Well, that's what you're basing it on. And so basing on a style point, basically, you're saying that does this house adhere to an architectural style, and how well does it how well is it executed? So that, for instance, if you build a Mediterranean style house, how well are you sticking to the details, and how well are you messing up? I've always thought that would be a fun way of having.
I think people would care about that less.
Care about the historical accuracy score.
Mm-hmm. I think more people would be inclined to go, yeah, I know about the score, but I like the way it looks. You know what I mean? Like, I've always wanted a house with a turret on it. So I know it doesn't really hit the score, but I like the way it looks. I think people would be more inclined to do that rather than a longevity score where they're not able to go, I know how long this is going to last because I've compared it to other things that I've seen the products in a house.
It depends. No, I generally, I agree with you.
Yeah.
But it depends.
It depends on the people.
If you could come out with the right, like if... some tastemaker,
you know what you could do?
Martha Stewart or Bunny Williams or someone was behind the scoring system. It could build enough panache that people would really want to make sure their house scores well.
Do you know what you could do? And I think Martha Stewart is exactly the right person for that. No, I'm just kidding. But I think what
looking
you could
for a
do,
call.
What you could do is you could show this house got a 97 on its historical accuracy score, and then show like a really beautiful, like well-built, well-designed house. This house got a 37, and then show a McMansion, and then people could actually see like...
Well, that's absolutely what you
that's
do.
That's a Mediterranean.
Because the other thing I think would happen is that someone wouldn't care that their house had a turret. Yeah. They would want to make sure their score's good.
Right.
And so, you know...
And then you'd be building them a way prettier house, even though they're like, I just want a good score. Just, I trust you. Yeah. Just make a good score, you know? I just 80 or above.
Yeah, so there could be a whole group of people that, just like with wines, like there's people that buy wines at 7-Eleven and don't care about the score.
Right.
There's other people that, you know, go to California and go to wineries with tastings and everything else because they want...
I wonder what the highest scoring box wine is.
I doubt they got a score.
Not a lot of sommeliers are out there tasting box wine. I think you're onto something with this score thing. I think you should do that. Longevity more than historical accuracy.
I think
accuracy.
The longevity is the better score.
Because it goes right next to R value. Those two things, they just play hand in hand. Yeah, it's going to be really sealed. It's going to do really well for about 5-10 years, but then it's not going to do well after that. It's going to break apart. You're going to be replacing things after about this long. But you can do that. You can totally, because some people do that, you know?
I kind of think that's a good idea.
Should we even be saying
this?
We don't have to release this episode.
Exactly. Okay, before this episode releases.
Just so we know, all right, we've got a, it's already patented. Don't worry. Patent pending. It's pending.
Wait, do we have the patent? Okay, good. Yeah,
Our lawyer just came in.
Said, we do have the patent.
It's a patented idea.
No, that's actually a really good idea. Because what you could do then is you could just basically build a wall system and say, look, this is how houses are being built with stucco.
Yeah.
This is a wall system that's going to last, you know, 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is a wall system, same thing, stucco, it's going to last 135 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean,
yeah, you can do the same thing. That's one of the main conversations we're doing with this shed roofs. We're like, this is a cedar roof. It's going to last about, on a high end, it's going to last 60 years. This is slate roof.
It's
going to last
good,
85
it's
years.
Good. Roofs are a good example because roofs already almost have an age score,
mm-hmm.
right? Because people will look at, and our clients will say, you know, how long is it going to last? You mm-hmm. know, let's look at these different roofs. Which one's a 100-year roof? Which one's...
And you can almost give something a high... Sorry, I'm jumping ahead. I'm just keep thinking of new ideas. You could almost give like copper versus slate. Great example. Slate requires maintenance, but is like a 300-year product. That almost knocks the score a little bit. So it's not a true 300 years.
Right.
It's more of like a 250 because you've got to maintain it every... however, it just goes down a little bit.
Right.
And then the copper, it is 100 years, but there's no maintenance required.
Yeah.
Unless something hits it or there's nothing.
Yeah.
So they're almost like kind of plays into each other like that, which could be helpful. That's a cool idea. You should run with that.
With all my free time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I feel like that just gives so much more credibility to everything you're trying to say.
It's something these my YouTube videos could stress and talk about. Let's talk about the two ways to build a stucco wall, because that's the one that stands out to me right now is the one that's, you know, the other one to look at would be the
stucco wall, windows, roofs,
stone veneers. I mean, you
what
know,
is that?
Well, as opposed to, you
like
know,
lime wash?
No, as opposed to building a 2x4 wall, air gap, and then like brick or stone,
mm-hmm.
people are now treating it like the stucco. And so they build a wall, they put concrete or something, and they're actually gluing stone on the wall like you put tiles on a bathroom wall.
Mm.
And so
that'll last.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. It's just like, yeah, you got a stone wall, but it's a veneer and it's this thick. And you've taken a 100 or 200-year wall down to about a 35-year wall. I think the homeowner needs to understand, right, that they've because of that building decision, mm-hmm. they are basically have lost 100 years in the longevity of their house
but
before
also
that thing
but
fails.
But also think about this. You're talking about a wall that might fail. If a wall fails, the window in the wall fails. You're replacing so much more than just, yep, the wall's one piece of it. I can just... The windows will hover in place as I move the wall away. You
well,
know?
And the other thing that's going to happen is a lot of those stone veneer companies aren't going to be around in 30 years, you know? And so all of a sudden now to replace that material, it'd be like trying to replace some of these tiles where they just don't match anymore.
They don't exist.
Yeah.
Dude, this, I'm just telling you, this is like, that's how you could meaningfully move the needle on craft in America is by making that system and start implementing it and start talking about it. Because what it does is people start asking questions on how long is this product going to last. And some people don't care. They're like, I'm not building it to last. I'm building it for very short. And it exposes them as...
Well, let's talk about one that I think rubber meets the road a lot.
Okay.
A deck versus a concrete patio with stone.
Okay.
Right? A wood deck, you know, off the back of some of these houses, I have a lot of people sending me pictures of houses with wood decks. Cheap, lasts probably 15, 20 years.
How long has the deck lasted outside our lake house? 40 years?
Well, with repairs.
I guess I'm counting repairs as maintenance.
Yeah, with maintenance and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. So you're saying no maintenance 20 years is what you're saying.
Yeah, they put...
I'm okay with
that. They put a new deck on that twice.
I don't know. I didn't know that. Okay, that helps.
No, that's fair. Decks in Texas don't last very long.
That's great.
Okay. And so you're talking.
I just don't know what I'm talking. I'm asking.
No. I it's fair because we don't build a lot of decks and I could be extra critical of them. But let's just say it's 20, 25 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Without maintenance. And by the 25th year, you're getting splinters in your toes. You've got cracked boards.
You got to replace it.
You got to replace it versus a stone patio, okay, which was, let's just say, from a house from the 20s, where there's a concrete pad and then there's stone laid down and some random thing, which I would recommend. Now, the cost of that deck, let's just say it's a 10 by 20 deck, is, you know, $15,000 versus $40,000, okay? Is that worth it, right? Is $25,000 worth the extra cost?
I just think it is to some people. And I think what you're doing by providing a system for it is you're just telling them, these are your options. You know what I mean? Like, now that person has the ability to go, yeah, it's a deck. It's outside, it's exterior wood. I know I'm going to have to sand it every couple of years. I know I'm going to have to repaint it. I know I'm going to have to get work done on it. It's a deck. It's an old deck. And then there are other people who are like, oh, I'm going to have to upkeep it. Let's just spend the extra $25,000 now and let's just do it and be done with it.
Okay. Another example would be a fence, right? That, you know, our neighborhoods now are filled with wood fences and our fence at our house is falling apart.
Yeah.
Chrissy's been ready to replace it for 10 years, you know, versus a stone wall, versus a brick wall, right? Versus something that is a 100-year product.
Yeah.
Now, well, of course, these wood fences are pretty expensive, but it's just, you know, I think that's a more readily tangible, and I think people have the expectation to pay for a wood fence, but you wouldn't pay for a stone fence. I mean, why would you do that, right? Mm-hmm. There's become
I do think that's where your score can almost really help distinguish, like really help distinguish itself. You know what I'm saying? Like you could go, in your backyard, we have the opportunity to build a stone one with a lifespan score of 85. Or we had the opportunity to build a wooden one with the lifespan score of 35. You know, it's getting a 35.
15 or 20, I don't know, before you have to do maintenance.
Yeah, I guess I'm not even, maybe the number shouldn't be years because it's going to be hard to get 100s on a lot of these products. People will want to strive for that 100 number. So you're going to want to get as close as you can to, like, it's got to be on a workable scale to where 100's attainable. But, and like for a chain link fence, that's like a, you know, that's a 15, 20.
Well, but because it's galvanized, it could last, you know, could last 50 years.
Galvanized is more.
Because then you get into a beauty score.
Well, you don't have to do beauty score. People just decide that for themselves. Because you don't want to tell people what is and what isn't beautiful. People don't like
that.
Oh,
I do, Jackson.
Well, I mean, I think you've experienced the pushback from saying, remember the whole episode on beauty versus taste and all that stuff? And you were saying.
And I was right with all that stuff?
No, you were not willing to say yes or no. It was so frustrating. Like, I'm just not ready to commit to that. Remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
Do you remember that? Yeah. I was like, so that's beauty, that's taste. You're like, no. And then you described it and it was like, that's kind of what I said. I don't know. I don't remember that episode entirely, but it was something like that. But I guess that's where I'm just like, maybe you don't put a beauty score on it. I don't think everything needs to be scored, but I think because our value is like, they have chosen to go the scoring route. If you match the R value, because in my mind, that's a direct contrast to R value.
Okay, well, a fence has nothing to do with R value. What score are you comparing it against?
I think it's fair to still compare it against everything else. Like, I guess you're just...
Because you're just doing an age.
You're just choosing what you want. Like, it could be, hey, I know that a stone fence has got a lifespan score of like 100, and I know if a wooden fence has a score of 30, but I just want a white picket fence house, or I've got a dog in my backyard, so I don't want a low cut stone fence, and I don't want to spend the money on a high stone fence. Right. So I'm gonna go the wood route, yeah. And I may have to replace it, but that's fine.
I think we're onto something.
I think we found something cool.
I think we're onto something.
I think we're fine.
Well, and then it gets complicated because, if, for instance, foam insulation is going to give you a very high R value score, but you open yourself up to the risk of the damage it could cause later. So there's a risk component that it's a more energy efficient product, but the risk for doing that could substantially
it's going to kick your lifespan score down.
It could reduce your lifespan score.
But the other thing that's kind of cool that you could do with it too, as you're dropping the lifespan score, is it could just, like, the explanations have got to be there. So it's just like, here's a couple bullet points on your lifespan score. Everything about your house is really good, but spray foam insulation has a chance to do this. And we factor everything in the lifespan score on the lower end of what they can be. So we, Like it could outlast this, but it would be, we've just seen on the lower end, it typically fails around here, you know?
Yeah. I need to start running some calculations. I think that there's worthwhile there.
Yeah. Well, to be able to even tell your client,
to educate your client alone, right? Yeah. Just how we're making and why we're making the decisions we're making.
Yeah. Well, and it's everything that you say. Like this is all right up your alley of why you build things to last. Now you're just putting a number to it and telling people, hey, this is going to last about this long. We've seen this in other houses in the area. We take apart these historic homes. They've got windows like this. They haven't even upkept and they're in good condition.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But then you would have to factor it in for different climate zones. So you would have to factor all that stuff in. But
I think we just speak to our climate zone for now.
Yeah. And then professionals could help.
Yeah. No, I think it's a cool idea. I'm glad I thought of it.
Yeah, I am too. That was a really good idea. Okay. Do you want to jump to our little 10-minute section for the patrons only?
Yeah.
We'll wrap up. Thank you for watching this episode of the Passion for Craft podcast. If you're a patron, we do a 10-minute section afterwards where we just kind of keep going and we're going to talk about other stuff. So we're going to jump to that section now. If you want to become a patron, do so today at patreon.com/passionforcraft.